When you first began to make music, did you have the ambition of doing music as a job?
I was interested in music very early age, I guess maybe all my life. So when I got into really pursuing music with my first serious instrument, trombone and then bass trombone, I had hoped to maybe become a bass trombone player for the symphony, Houston Symphony, or for major bands, things of that nature. So yes, I was hoping to make a living doing that. Now it didn't work out on the trombone. I got involved with guitar, pretty well taught myself. That was my next instrument. Got very good at guitar. Nothing special, but just good, and did a lot of band work with guitar in the 70s. Part of that was improvisation work, and that's where I got into a lot of experimentation, learning how to free flow, you might say. I expanded on my jazz work at that time. My major influences were jazz, so I'd say my earliest was Dave Brubeck. Things like Take Five, Unusual Rhythm Patterns, 7/4 beats. And with jazz, you have long jams that are repetitive or cyclic. Also with rock jams, same thing. I loved long rock jams. And so that was a part of what I was getting into. And so here I was trying to figure out ways to make a living at it. And for whatever reason, once I got into what I like doing now in the late 70s, 1979 to be specific, I did try to create music albums, cassettes for income. Now I knew that the type of music I was doing was not that popular on a general basis to generate sales. Only a few groups or artists or musicians have ever gone really big with this type of music. Really big meaning making a living. I kind of hoped it would work out, but hey, had a day job. And so you have to have something to pay the bills, buy your instruments, pay for your recordings, pay the rent, pay the mortgage, stuff like that. And then with the opportunity, maybe something would happen that would allow, that is it being your musical style, to be successful enough to make a living. So that has never really happened, though it would be nice if it had. I'm grateful for the wonderful folks that support my music over all the years, which is ironic because though I had sort of an audience in the early 80s, my understanding was most of my audience, if people got aware of it, would probably be in Europe because they were the most open-minded, progressive, and that type of stuff. Thus, continuing still to be able to do the work today because of folks finding my music and helping me wanting to get back into it, and very dear people like Levin and Christelle, who have been wonderfully supportive.
Talking about Levin and Christelle, they both have this like extra musical thing to their art. Like Levin is really consciously focusing on the sound of dolphins in Hawaii, and Christelle has this retro-futuristic graphic side to her art. Is this something you are looking after as well, or do you want the music to speak for itself?
In 1980, right after I'd first started out, one of the things that I got interested in was using environmental sounds with my music. So the first thing I did was use rainfall. And on my first cassette that I formally published the summer of 1980 called Sound Paintings, side one was called Rainforest. Now, I don't believe I used bird sounds on that one. I added those later with Rainforest Music, the LP. And to do that, I went to the Houston Zoo early one morning. They let me in special to go to their birdhouse and just record bird sounds. It was fun. It was a great event. I used a little portable Sony cassette deck, stereo, really nice one. And went in there and did a great job and created the tracks for that. So that was my first extension of mixing music with environmental sounds. And so I think this is what you're talking about as far as going beyond just the regular music. Now, what we look at here and what I want you to keep in mind is I never really did too much more than rain mixed with bird sounds. In East Texas rainforest music, I included thunderstorms and bug sounds. I have some wonderful bug sounds here. So I also mixed those in there in that particular recording. And though that has not been formally published, I'm thinking maybe about doing that on demand on CDs. It's not really suitable for cassette because it's too long for one side of a cassette. It's about a 40-minute continuous piece, if I remember right. Now, recently when I started performing again, I ran across and some really nice ocean sounds that I use. And then some friends of mine, Buzzy and Sheila, gave us, Cindy and I, a new set of wind chimes for Christmas. And I already have several sets of wind chimes hanging in the back. And as I listened to all the different wind chimes, because we had a particularly windy time after Christmas, I started thinking, boy, that would be fun to record. So I did a really wonderful of recording wind chimes. And so I have a set of that, which I can mix wind noise with from my desktop Evolver. And I do the same thing with the ocean. So I have three different types of ambient sounds I use with my music. And I start each show now either with rain, wind chimes, or ocean, and end it with the same rain, wind chimes, or ocean. And my shows are one continuous piece of music. I don't break up the pieces. It's one continuous experience of anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. Most of the things I'll be playing in Europe will be about 40 minutes to an hour. The other thing I added was in March of last year, this lady shows up at this program, and you'll see a video of it. It's the first video that I have in the email. She shows up at this program, an overhead projector, oils, water, colors, and does an overhead projection straight out of the 60s. I loved it. I went, man, I love having that. Now, I can't travel with that, don't have a way to do it, so I kind of cheated and created a more contemporary light show. And with that contemporary light show, I use just a regular projector, and I put the colors on top of me. I love playing with colors on me, I've discovered. Really feels great. And you'll see an example of that in the second video. And the second video is a combination of the light show with wind chimes. And so you can kind of get a feeling for what I'm doing there. And you can, you're more than welcome to share that. Those are off YouTube as an example. So I do go beyond just that, because I do just the music, because I do like involving visuals and the types of audios that really get people kind of into a different state of mind. Remember, my focus is altered states through music, as you can read about in my on my website. I take people and grab their memories of experiences of beautiful rainfalls, wind chimes, oceans. They kind of create their own visuals, and I add the colors and stuff. And it creates a neat program. And I'm hoping I'm going to be able to have the ability to do the light shows along with everything else. If that didn't work, that's okay. I'm very open and easy for that. But that's kind of where I go with my music. And I hope those videos will help you see that.
In this radio interview we did with Houston FM, you talk about records, but I was wondering if there were a lot of things going on live at the time in your region as well. Like, did you go to shows, or was there some sort of scene of peers who were interested in the same music and made left field music, or was it more like a solitary thing?
In the early 80s, I was in the Houston area where I grew up. Remember, I grew up on Galveston Bay, south of Houston. And there was not really any type of electronic music scene as such. There was improvisation. I did a lot of improvisation with folks, guitars, percussion instruments, things of this nature. But I was pretty well on my own as far as electronics goes and the type of things I was getting into with the repetitive cyclic type music. People would come over and hear my music and be really kind of fascinated by it. It was kind of interesting. The only time I really ever got to work seriously with another musician where we produced some, what I think, really good stuff, was a gentleman named Renard Cohen, R-E-N-A-R-D Cohen. Now, this is 1981. He is playing acoustic piano and Fender Rhodes, and very creative, very gifted keyboard player. Amazing. Totally humbles me. And a friend of ours, a common friend we had named Mary Jane Valdez, another musician there in Houston, connected us. She said, I think you guys would enjoy playing music together. So Renard comes over and brings his Fender Rhodes, and I set up one of the Pro 1s for him, and I take the other two Pro 1s and the Yamaha SK-20, and we started creating some really wonderful electronic, cyclic, repetitive jam music. And we decided to call ourselves Voyager because we wanted to take people on a voyage with our music. And we played for about a year together, had an opportunity to do a concert in Austin that wasn't very successful simply because they didn't set it up properly. Actually did not have electricity to power our gear. It was a very strange thing. I don't know how to talk about it. Had a few people that showed up, not what I think the creators had hoped, but regardless, the experience was wonderful. Really could play well together, anticipate together, improvise well together. A fabulous experience, and I hope the work that we do is published someday, CD, LP, or both. It's to me as good as it gets. Now, Runard currently, oddly enough, is in Pennsylvania. He created a video production company with his brother. And what he does on weekends is he has a blues band, plays guitar and does blues. I don't know if he does anything else, but I thought that was kind of neat. But that's been probably the most successful time I've ever had working with another person that I really enjoyed. I miss him. That's the only person I've ever had that tight of connection with. So most everything I did by myself in my little home studio, either with the speakers or headphones. And I would occasionally get to play live, but there was never an audience. I remember this one friend of mine tried to promote me and get set up for me to do some live shows. And people would hear my music and call it headphone music. They said, this is not the kind of stuff we want in our clubs or shows. Even if I was even wanting to play between sets just for the heck of it. And there was really never an audience. Now, the audience, even today, isn't that great. I played Houston and Austin. And you play anywhere from 5 to maybe a maximum. My best audience was with Christel in Austin. So that'd be my second gig back in February of last year, 2010, and we had about 100 people there, so that was pretty neat. Usually it's 5 to maybe 30 people, if we're lucky. So this music just doesn't have that much of an audience. Now, there's a pretty good underground music group right now in Houston, Dallas, and Austin, and what's funny about them, they kind of similar musicians, do different stuff. A lot of folks like what is called noise, where they just experiment with sounds, a lot of different types of experimental music. That's the neat thing to me. It's the various types. And mine is kind of just one extreme in one direction, then you go to another direction. There are small audiences here, and hopefully that will continue to develop, and I will continue to be a part of that as it grows. Though I do look forward to everything working out for this tour in May in Belgium, because I've never been around a lot of people that really have loved this music as such. And I don't mean my music as such, but this type of music. And I'm glad to be a part of that and hope to get to meet and play some music with some really neat people.
And if you played live back then, what kind of bands would you play?
During the 70s, I mostly did guitar, acoustic and electric. And so the type of music we would do would be rock and roll jam music, as well as jazz. And I wrote a lot of neat little jazz patterns and things that we would jam to. We would create some nice rock and roll jams. And again, it's the same type of cyclic music. During that time, I discovered a German group that they were a good influence on me, along with Terry Riley and Steve Reich, and that was Achim Reichel. The two albums were Aerolung and Autovisions. I love the cyclic work they did with those, and the loops and the things they set up between the saxophone, the percussion, the guitar, the bass. Fun stuff to listen to. And this was early to mid-70s, I believe. And so that was a very interesting influence for me also. So a lot of the stuff we did was just rock or jazz, but all kind of focusing on jamming. Now, remember, I did not get into doing my own music until 1979, the fall of 79, and didn't really get to perform it live until 1981. One time I can think of, two times, excuse me, in 1981. One time by myself in a club to help promote a special event of electronic music and experimental music and just different music for a special program. Played about 30 minutes or so. Mixed reviews at best. People are kind of like, oh, this dude's weird. It was a reggae club, so I'm kind of in the middle of this reggae stuff. And I love reggae music. Oh my gosh. I think that's fun. Then I did a live show where you got a picture of it that Tommy has for the event in the first Saturday there in Belgium where I get to play. After that, other than the time Renard Cohen and I tried to play together and I described that event, never played live again electronic music-wise, period, until Christelle. And I played February 5th and 6th, Houston and Austin. The early days, it was with my Pro Ones in the SK20, and at that event with Christelle, it was with a Dave Smith Mono Evolver keyboard and the SK20. Plus, I had some taped loops of my old music that I also used. So that would be about it.
So you said you didn't make much music between your last album in the 80s and the moment that Christelle of Stahlroom Source asked you to play with her again. What was your main occupation in the years between? What did you do? And did you still listen to music a lot?
I actively worked on creating the type of electronic music I do starting in August 1979. And the last piece I designed and wrote was in August 1999. Now, in that period of time, I went from pure analog instruments with the Pro Ones, with sequencing and arpeggiators, to MIDI. With MIDI, I got into Casio CZ series synthesizers, some of my favorite I've ever had. Got into MIDI really deep because when I got into MIDI, I quit using analog tape because to me, MIDI is like a digital tape recorder. You set up everything, you get it how you want it, the balances, the volumes, the pans, any types of effects you want to use that can be controlled by MIDI, everything is there, and then you press a button and it plays. So it's all, to me, the composition and the creation of it, and you don't have mistakes, you get rid of the mistakes, you clean things up. And because I'm not an accomplished keyboard player as such, I'll tell you right now, I will make mistakes live, and I hope people will forgive me, particularly since I had a minor stroke in November 4th, 2008, election day, when President Barack Obama got elected. It was minor, it messed up my right hand, and I cannot play guitar anymore because of that. So I have to be very careful when I play to control my right hand, and I will. Sometimes it just doesn't cooperate. Not a big deal. I'm very fortunate to get to continue to play music. But anyway, so I got into MIDI very deeply, and I loved it. I got into some very wonderful types of electronic instruments that I used, especially two sound modules called Insonic ESQ-Ms. I bought two of those because I could set them up for stereo. I would have 16 channels of sounds. I could make monophonic or polyphonic, and it was really a lot of fun. Gave me a lot of variations for creativity. Plus, they were a mix of analog and digital, and the sounds I had from those were just wonderful. I had a blast with those. The other module I got into was a Chord X5DR. And those were the three main instruments I used, the two Insonics and the X5. So that became the foundation. And then I would use a MIDI controller. I had a Casio CZ1 for a long time that was my MIDI controller. Plus just a couple of other different things I would use. Juno D, things of this nature. That was kind of neat. Oddly enough, another aspect of my creativity was I traveled a lot, and that's how I made my living. I'm a public speaker, I'm a workshop provider, and most of my clients were the automotive industry, Chrysler, Ford, Toyota, Nissan. So I would travel the country doing these workshops, and what was cool about the MIDI, particularly after I was able to get a laptop, was I would use a MIDI program, Cakewalk, and then I got into Traction, and now I use Acid Pro 6. I would sit in the evening and create music. Had a mini MIDI keyboard controller I would travel with. It's pretty cool. I would use take the X5DR with me. Before that, I have had a Yamaha QY10, which actually had a MIDI recorder built into it, so I could do the recordings and then bring them back, finish the stuff at home. And so through the whole 90s, most of my music was created in a hotel room, using the different modules with MIDI, maybe using the laptop for recording. So the last piece of music I created was at a Residence Inn in Dearborn, Michigan, August 1999, while I was working a Ford project. And the music I created in the 90s became the album Transformations 2 into Separate Realities. I also did another album called East Texas Rainforest Music, which was a variation on the original Rainforest Music, kind of upgraded with digital MIDI and stuff. So I think it's really pretty. Used some different sound effects with the rain, thunderstorms, things of this nature, and got some pretty aggressive electronics going in that. And in the 80s, I did Transformations 1, Ancient Minimal Meditations, which is about to be released on LP from Aguirre Records. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be very exciting. So I never really quit making music. Now, after August 1999, believe it or not, what happened was I got really into the internet and doing web page work. And that kind of became my new source of creativity. And that lasted, well, I'd still do that now. I mean, I have a number of websites that I work with that I've created to share all kinds of information. I have one for my wife, for her horses, and some automotive websites, as well as my music website, and some different things like that. It's a lot of fun to me. And whenever I was contacted by Douglas McGowan about, "Are you the guy that did Wizards?" around 2005, it got me back into my music. And what I did was I remastered everything and set it up to be able to share it with people for free. And with Doug's encouragement, I made samples instead of just giving it away. He has a record company called Yoga Records that he likes to reissue really old, unique stuff. I helped him remaster a lot of tapes from folks for that, and that was a lot of fun. So my work with music never quit, in a sense, other than that period of time of about 6 years. Now, as far as starting new music and creating new music, when Christel got a hold of me in fall of 2009 and I accepted doing those shows with her, she put me on the spot because I had to get serious now about playing again. So basically, that's when I started getting back into creating music by taking some of my old loops, digitizing them to use as the foundation, and creating new ones. Now, I currently have expanded to two Dave Smith Instruments Mono Evolver keyboards, a Dave Smith Instruments Evolver desktop to replace the three Pro Ones, because Dave Smith is who created the Pro One synthesizers that I love. And I relate to those instruments very well. And I'm getting better and better using them. And instead of my Yamaha SK20, I decided to use a Prophet 08 because it's very similar to the sound structures that I'm used to with the Pro Ones, but it's polyphonic. And so that really helped too. Plus, the Yamaha is getting real old, delicate, still plays and sounds good, but it's hard to transport and weighs a lot. And I just want to keep it working, good working condition. So currently, since the basically the fall of 2009, I started creating music again and creating pieces. And most of the stuff I will be playing, most of the stuff I'll be playing in Belgium will be a combination of old and new. And people that have come to my programs seem to really like it. So I hope that no one will be disappointed when I get to play before the audiences in Europe. Since 1980, I basically made my living teaching stress management workshops, meditation, helping businesses with their employees and management training, working with the automotive industry, doing live workshops. I'm a public speaker. I'm a pretty good public speaker. I've been able to take care of our family through all that time. But the main underground part of me has been music. Has been, will always be. And I'm very blessed for that. And I'm very thankful to have it as a part of my life, and thankful that folks find my old and hopefully new stuff interesting to listen to.
After your album Wizards was reissued on Taped Sounds first and later on Important Records, it seemed that suddenly you were this huge inspiration to a new generation of musicians worldwide. How does it feel that the impact of your music is bigger now than at the time you composed it?
To have my music kind of be rediscovered, and it was always there apparently, I just didn't realize that there were folks that enjoyed it. First with Douglas McGowan contacting me to find out if I was the guy that did Wizards, and then 2 years later, the miracle of Levin Martins contacting me to want to reissue Wizards. That was astounding. I look forward so much to meeting him and thanking him in person. I got to meet Douglas. He lives in Los Angeles, and we know each other well. But to get to meet Levin and just to get to let him know in person just what a blessing he's been in my life, I'm looking forward to that. Plus, to play programs together. Wow. Hard to describe. The gentleman from Important Records, John, to want to issue it one more time. Astounding. I always felt that Wizards was just beautiful. I love to listen to it. And to have folks who have that same feeling for it is very, very special. Now, to get the recognition for that, you have to keep in mind, I wrote Wizards for me as an expression of what I am. And I think any artist would agree with me that when you write music, create a painting, a sculpture, any type of artwork, you do it for yourself in a sense, as an expression of what you are and who you are. And to have folks enjoy it in that manner, it's like icing on the cake. Astounding. And I'm just so pleased to be a part of the electronic music scene in the manner that I've been blessed to do so. And it's hard to describe, to tell you the truth, on one level, because you never expect it. It's the sweetest thing anyone could ever want. When Levin published the LP of Wizards, and it sold out in like 2 weeks or 10 days or something, which really said that there was an audience there in Europe like I always thought there would be. That's been one of the most special things about it. Again, that was just Wizards just happened to be one of those pieces that just came together right in the right manner. And so to have the opportunity to meet people that enjoy the music, to perform with them, to know that there are people that listen to my music and they find inspiration, and it takes me back to the folks that inspired me, you might say. I mentioned in the 70s, Akeem Raquel, Errol Long and Autovisions, Terry Riley and his early electronic music work, Rainbow and Curved Air, Shriek Camel, Swirling Dervishes. He did so many nice ones, and it was too bad that he quit doing that type of music. It was just so much fun to listen to. And Steve Reich, just fascinating stuff. And so to be able to kind of affect folks the same way that I was affected, and hopefully my attitude is that when you're inspired, or you don't try to mimic the artist that inspires you, you kind of take off in your own way and your own expression to be able to find your voice, your style, your expression of the music. And I think that's the most important thing that anybody needs to realize, is that anytime you're being creative in any manner, that's you. That's a part of your heart, your being, your soul. And to have people enjoy that and get to be inspired by it, it's very, very special.
Did this revival of your music lead to any new work? Are you working on music again now?
Yes, I'm working on new music. It's a kind of a combination of old and new. My best period of creating music, from my point of view, where I really got into the type of music that I like to create, was when I had 3 Sequential Circuits Pro 1 synthesizers and a Yamaha SK20 synthesizer, which is a combination organ, strings, and synth. Basically, those were the instruments where I made most of the music that people are familiar with. So now we move up to this day and time, when Christelle invited me to play music on the program with her in Houston and Austin, Texas, I still have the SK-20. And at that time, I used the SK-20. I had acquired a Dave Smith Instruments mono evolver keyboard because from my research, it was the closest to the Pro Ones. And he developed the Sequential Seekers keyboard, so it seemed natural to use his product. And in a sense, even though it is MIDI available, it has the ability to create 16-step sequences and arpeggios in four different styles. So basically, starting with the Dave Smith keyboard and the Yamaha SK-20, I did those shows in Houston and Austin. However, because there were some things I really liked that I played that I created back in the early 80s, I made sound samples of the patterns. The one used on Wizard Side 1, 3, Track 3, and Side 2, Track 5. And the other sample I used was from Transformations 1, Ancient Minimal Meditations, which is available on cassette, Side 1, Track 2, and Side 2, Track 2, two similar patterns. And I can't reproduce those. They're very unique, very special patterns. Once I had recorded them, really can't create those in the same way again. So I took those samples, and I used those as part of my performance. Now, at the same time, I've created some new sequences and patterns for my style of music. So that's what people hear, as well as I've done some new samples of nature sounds, wind chimes, ocean, that I also use in my mixes, because I really love working with the environment still, and using it as part of my show when I create music. Now remember, everything I do basically is improvised. So these patterns are the foundation that I improvise over. So really no two shows or no two times I play are alike. Everything is unique. And so that's one of the things that I like in how I create music. That's good news and bad news, I guess. If you come to hear something played a certain way, it's not going to happen. But it will be similar. And so you will enjoy the unique experience at that moment for that evening or for that show or for that session or for that recording time. It will be unique to that time. And what's wild about that is that's kind of what life is like. There's really no two moments that are the same. They're similar, make similar decisions. We have similar circumstances. Well, same thing with my music. It kind of reflects to me the essence of life. But I guess the bottom line in all of this is my joy in getting back to creating music again. I truly let that go for right at 10 years. And to return back to my basic style has been my favorite part. And having these instruments, I now use a Dave Smith Prophet 08, two Dave Smith Mono Evolver keyboards, and a Dave Smith Desktop Evolver. And they really suit what I like to do. They're the closest to what I used to use. I'm not one of those people that get into the old styled analog, other than they are analog instruments, and that's the neatest part about them. Doing analog with new technology, which is more stable and on one level a little easier to do, but it's no different than what I used to use. I do not use MIDI, which I could easily do. I'm well versed in MIDI. May get back to using it a little more again, but I just use the built-in sequencers and arpeggiators as I create my music. Now, if I do any mixes or if I want to do any adjustments, I use Acid 6 really to set that up. And creating everything I record is in WAV files. And if I want to record tracks, then I record those tracks in a WAV file and then match them up in Acid 6 usually. And that's become kind of my tape recorder. I've moved away from the analog tape simply because it's not practical. I personally can't hear that much difference in the quality of the sound, if there is any, but that's another story.
So one last question here, about the altered states angle in your music. because on your website you wrote a short piece about relaxation and meditation. And I was wondering how important is this this relation between music, your own music, I mean, and relaxation or meditation for you? Like, how important is it for people to enjoy your music in that specific kind of way?
It's not important to me that people meditate or relax or anything while they listen to my music. But the nature of my music kind of takes them to that space. And it's hard to describe, but it's kind of fun for me. I don't really get to see the audience or experience the audience that much as I play. But most people close their eyes, kind of let the music take them wherever they want to go. And that's really, to me, the idea of what you're trying to work with here. Whether you're in a forced altered state by using some type of external influence, chemical, pot, whatever it may be, alcohol, who knows? It will enhance that. If you're a natural meditator, it will enhance that. I'm a hardcore meditator, not that I do it daily, but I love using music to trip out, you might say, to go into altered states. My music, again, my examples of music that I discuss in my article that you were referencing. So it's not important to me at all. It's just something that is available if someone wants to use it for that, and particularly when I play live, that enhances it even to a different degree. I think, remember, I talked about earlier in the interview that when in the early 80s, when a friend of mine tried to get me some gigs, people would go, well, that's headphone music. You know, that's not kind of music you sit and listen to in a club. Yeah, okay, you can do that. But listening to it live with a room just filled with sound and wind chimes, rain, or whatever it may be, that's pretty cool. And it can sure affect your listening enjoyment.